On today's episode of Baseball Barbacast, Adley Rutschman is back in Baltimore, but this time he's wearing red socks. He goes yard twice at Camden, and everyone in attendance certainly loved it. We use that to talk about the trade deadline 1 month later. A month and a day has passed since the day of many deals, and we look back with 2020 hindsight, and it's Friday, so of course, the good, the bad, the ugly, not to mention your weekly dosage of what's up with Shohei Ohtani. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows how happy Baltimore ball fans are right now. After watching Adley Rutschman go yard twice at Camden Yards, I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman, and that's a good thing, right, Adley?
Yeah.
Camden Yards, home runs?
That was the plan all along.
Nice.
Adley back in Baltimore, one of the many topics on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast. But before we get to that, a reminder that tonight, Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV, featuring us. Sort of. Baseball Barbacast pregame show. Oh my goodness, this is going to be fun. And then alt cast for the first two innings, starting at 6:45 p.m. Eastern. First pitch between the Tigers and the Guardians is at 7:15, assuming weather doesn't mess it up. You can keep an eye on that. This will be the second game of a doubleheader today because they're making up a game. So keep an eye on that start time, but I'm very excited to alt cast.
You have to watch the entirety of the first game in order to tune in to us. It's like watching season one of a show. If you don't watch it, you won't understand storylines.
Fine. We will catch you up if you do not watch game one. You can watch exclusively on the Yahoo Sports app or yahoosports.com. We are so excited to see it. Yeah, this is going to be fun. I mean, I watch the Guardians all the time, but now you can all watch them with me and Jake.
You can trust that Jordan knows what he's talking about. No baseball team has entered his eyeballs this year more than the Guardians. But enough about the Central North Coast bias. Let's move on to our opener in Baltimore. Two home runs last night at Camden Yards for Adley Rutschman is a sentence that has only ever been said twice before.
Wow.
Adley Rutschman homering multiple times at home at Camden Yards. The most recent time that Adley Rutschman went yard twice at Camden Yards, April 24th of this year.
Oh.
Against the Boston Red Sox.
Of course.
Otherwise known as the game that got Alex Cora fired.
Whoa.
That was the Friday game. Remember the Red Sox kicked their snot in the Saturday game 17-1?
Right.
And then they did the Red Wedding.
Sorry.
That day before, Adley homered twice. So the dominoes, in effect, to get to this moment, butterfly flaps its wings, my dear friend. And that is what we had yesterday. Adley Rutschman returning to the scene of the no playoff wins a month after being dealt from Baltimore to Boston. I was there before the game. I did all the hoopla and then
drive here.
Drove up to New York. Jordan Schusterman, it has been a weird time.
Yeah.
As someone that cares about the Baltimore Orioles, with Adley Rutschman coming to town, it only got weirder.
Yeah, and so we're going to use this as sort of a transition to reflecting on the deadline. We had our trade deadline live special reaction pod sitting in these chairs here in the Yahoo Studios in New York. And just thinking back to that afternoon, I mean, let's just focus on the Adley of it all, right? I mean, that was a stunner. That was, especially because the Scooble trade happened a few days earlier, Adley and that decision by the Orioles to move on and get one heck of a prospect package, but still, when you consider what that seemed to signify, that was the story of the deadline. It really was when you kind of move Scooble to the side. So just thinking about how you felt and how Orioles fans felt and how angry they were, let's talk about what's happened since then, right? Because
before last night,
particularly before, and because now we have this Adley hitting two homers against them. It's like, oh my God, what a disaster. But even when we were looking ahead at the beginning of the week, like, oh, Adley's coming back, we weren't even sure if he was going to play yesterday. He was on the injured list when they acquired him and then has been dealing, sorry, correct me if I'm wrong, he's been dealing with a different injury or the same injury?
I think that when you're a catcher,
you're always injured.
That's always injured all the time, everywhere in your body. I believe it is an elbow that has been nagging him recently.
He had a wrist. He was on the IL with a wrist injury.
And that's connected to your elbow.
That's true. It's all together. And yes, when you're a catcher, you're always dealing with something. But the point is he had been activated on August 11th, but he had been missing games still. And that was then starting, especially this week, as you're looking forward to Adley coming back and you're like, oh, right, this guy has been hurt a lot and he hasn't always been available. And so while there was always going to be some level of emotional homecoming because Adley's a very popular figure, it was like, is he going to talk before the game and then just sit on the bench? Like, how's this going to go?
So earlier this week, Red Sox interim manager Chad Tracy went on the radio show and said that he expects this to be something that Adley is dealing with the rest of the year, that he might be getting more days off before October. And so, yeah, yesterday on the field before the game, I was talking to friend of the program, Boston Globe writer Alex Speer.
One of the best.
I was like, Adley's here. He's not even going to play. And Alex goes, no, he's in the lineup. And so leading into yesterday, everything Adley related had gone about as well as it could have possibly gone for the Orioles.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so weird.
Yeah.
The prospects they got back have been crushing it.
Yep.
Adley was barely playing.
And was not hitting when he was playing.
Was bad. Even after last night, his OPS is 638 for the Red Sox. He was disappointing. The Orioles were coming off this road trip that was like encouraging. They added Luis Robert Jr. is on the team now. He homered last night.
Yep.
And there was this sense of optimism where it's like, oh, we're doing okay without Adley. He's not even playing. No, that's not how it went. It went
flipped different quickly.
Way. It went a different way. Went a different way because Adley went yard twice. I was there. You know, he gets the big round of applause. He gets the tribute video. He looks the correct level of emotional. No, not dismissive, but not, you know, affected in this, as you might say. During the pregame huddle, there were like 35 people in the scrum. Yeah. It's about as big of a scrum as I can remember in Baltimore.
Right.
And honestly, it was Ohtani-ish. Mm. The way that we were sardined in there, the number of people, and Adley didn't say anything remotely interesting. He didn't say anything mean or, you know, he says, do you have any ill will towards Orioles GM Michael Elias? He's like, no. What do you want the guy to say? Adley plays it straight. He hits it down the fairway. And last night, he hit it over the fairway and into the seats two separate times. The Red Sox win a close one, 6-5. But the story really is the theater of that. Of Adley, the prince that was promised, the number one pick, the future of a franchise, coming back in his first game against the Orioles in Camden Yards, homering twice, is a twist. It's a twist of the knife in the wound.
Right. And he couldn't have guaranteed he was, you know, going to homer twice. But it does feel like whatever he was dealing with, I'm not surprised that he was like, I'm going to play. I'm not going to go back there. And maybe he gets a day off this weekend and they have a full game series. But I have to imagine, not that he's concerned about the optics of it all, but I think he also wants to not, you know, show them. But I also think, he wants to be like, I'm Adley Rutschman. I play baseball. I'm really good. Here's what you're missing. Even if he doesn't have ill will towards Michael Elias, I think that's just a natural competitive spirit for him.
He's actually the only person in Baltimore last night without ill will towards Michael Elias.
Right. He was like, all right, cool. This is a new opportunity. I am definitely going to October as opposed to 25% chance. Actually, it's probably higher than that. But yeah, the Orioles, it was also just a dispiriting loss, right? Adley hits the two homers, but the Red Sox score in the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th.
Have to win ball games that way.
That's not a good recipe there. Boston also has been a little bit more up and down recently after their scorching hot midsummer stretch, but a really, really impressive win for them. We'll see how the rest of this weekend goes because we've kind of talked about, right, how many AL East teams are we going to get in here? The Orioles are going to have to deal with some of these other AL East teams. Toronto's more relevant in that wildcard race, but, you know, it's not like the Red Sox are going to let up and just let the Orioles into the postseason.
Quick Red Sox story. So yesterday before the game, I was catching up with friend of the program, Caleb Durbin, Wash U Bear, third baseman for the Red Sox. I was like, hey, man, I'm not writing anything right now about this, but just how did you guys do that? It's like you sitting here like the wave of the preposterous hot stretch you went on is over. like, what happened? And he like sits in his chair and he kind of leans back. He's like, I don't know. He's like looking
just like me for real.
And he's like,
I don't know.
He's like, I don't either. And he's looking around the room, right? And he's like, well, to be honest with you, when we were playing really bad, I was like, how are we this bad? We have a lot of good players. A lot of good players. And so then we started winning. I was like, well, yeah, we have a lot of good players.
Yeah. And if we're pausing on the Red Sox here, I mean, the other biggest story for them in the last 2 weeks, Mickey Gasper. Duh. Wilson Contreras is injured, or at least injured enough to go on the injured list. I think it's one of those things that he'd probably be playing through it because the Red Sox have enough of a cushion, not that they're not playing for anything. And because, God bless them, Mickey Gasper is having one heck of a heater, finally goes hitless last night.
Oh.
So, I mean, Orioles raised the freaking banner. You had Mickey Gasper go 0-for-3 with two strikeouts. But what he was doing against the Mariners, what he was doing against the Yankees, he was going to be sent down when they brought back.
He did get sent down.
And then as soon as Contreras goes on the IL, Mickey Gasper comes back and has this unbelievable stretch. So do I expect him to be hitting second in October? No, but he might be hitting his way onto the postseason roster. I mean, I haven't looked exactly at the machinations of what that roster is going to look like. But yeah, Mickey Gasper. And then also, much more important for the Red Sox. Sorry, Mickey Gasper. Roman Anthony homer last night. And that was like, yep. That's the guy.
Oh, right. Now
that's the guy. And I know he's been out for a long time. I know he wasn't even awesome this year before he went on the injured list. That is an important baseball player who, when he is hitting the ball, well, you watch out. Watch out for Roman Anthony. So weird times with the Red Sox. I will say, just looking forward for the rest of the regular season. And now Adley's a big part of this too. I don't know when we're going to see this Red Sox lineup at full strength, right? We haven't seen it. We haven't seen it with Adley. We haven't seen it with Curtis Meade. Remember him? He's sort of working his way back, but doesn't sound like he's about to like be activated. And now Contreras is out, right? He's been their best hitter the whole season. Where does Trevor Story fit into this? We just have not. They've clearly been okay. They've won a bunch of baseball games. I just don't know. They're not the only team that can say this, but there in particular, we have not seen the Red Sox lineup at full strength, fully actualized. It hasn't forced Chad Tracy to make some interesting decisions about who's in the lineup. Of course, righty versus lefty. So that's something I'm curious about.
I agree. However, the team that they're almost certainly going to play in the first round, the New York Yankees, has a very similar situation.
Yeah.
Just because of whenever Aaron Judge returns, it will require a very interesting sort of reshuffle with those pieces as well. Jordan, we are sitting in these seats, and a month and a day ago, we sat in these very seats, and we told you, the listener, the viewer, that every trade that was happening was important. I have a very vivid memory of being here and the mayhem of the deadline and our producers in our ear telling us all the trades. And at one point he goes, Caleb Ferguson to the Cardinals. And I wanted to jump through the screen and punch producer Andrew Hart's in the face for, you know.
Caleb
Ferguson, who has since been released by the Cardinals.
How many innings did Caleb Ferguson throw with the Cardinals?
Seven, you know, maybe.
Well, I think I'm taking the under on that.
Anyway, the point here, I know our producers are going to do
eight and a third. Nine appearances, 8.64 ERA.
Okay.
Shout out, Andrew.
Means the deadline time is, we are trying to impart importance.
Yes.
Onto all these moves. Like, oh, well, this is a great move. This could matter. And so let's take a breath and let's put on some goggles. Jordan, those glasses you're wearing, are those 2020?
I mean,
that's hindsight.
They help me see. And, you know, we say, okay, the importance of the trades, that's also something that I attempt in the hours after the deadline. I've done this the last few years where I rank all the trades. It's kind of a goofy exercise, but I am basically trying to do it based on import, on like, okay, which of these moves is going to impact the rest of the season? And it is funny. Look, you know, I group them into categories. So it's, I had a bucket of just like, here's all the Pirates bullpen moves. That hasn't really done much of a, we were like, oh, Pirates. Yeah, Pirates. When we did winners and losers, we said Pirates. Oh,
and then their offense sucked.
Right. And then their offense sucked and it didn't matter. The Guardians had a busy deadline. Some of that's been very good. Some of that has been not as good. We'll see Foster Griffin tonight on Friday Night Baseball. Join us on the Altcast. And then then I have like, I organize the different starters, right? Like, this is kind of a random place to start, but Tyler Mahle, okay?
Not a random place to start.
But so Tyler Mahle, when I ranked my, when I ranked the trades, I had like a category towards the top of like, we want you to start a postseason game, right? And that's Freddy Peralta and Clay Holmes and Robbie Ray and Luis Castillo even, and even Jose Soriano. And that's like kind of a weird one because the Blue Jays are buying and selling. I had Tyler Mahle when the Braves acquired him and Dustin May, we should mention, down in innings years. And it's like, these guys are going to pitch for this major league team. They are important, but how important are they?
If they start a postseason game,
Now, Mahle and May, we can kind of group them together because both of those teams were interested. Well, we know the Braves were trying to trade for Jacob DeGrom. That is a fact.
Sure.
But we know the Brewers were trying to trade for Tarek Skubal.
And they're both in October. Yes. Like, they both know they're going to be in the postseason.
Someone's going to have to pitch for them in the postseason.
They have one starter that is one of the best five pitchers on the planet, whether that's Sale or Mizorowski. And yet you're looking at the back end of the rotation and you're like, okay, who's starting game two?
Right.
Who's starting game three? Who's starting game four? And the Braves, when they acquired Tyler Mahle, I don't even think they were like, that's our game two starter. As of right now, he has to be.
I think so.
He's been, one, the best pitcher traded.
Yeah.
Best starting pitcher traded.
I think that's pretty much true. So just to give some numbers, so Tyler Mahle has made five starts and he has a 1.48 ERA. Skubal, Gossman, Peralta, Soriano, Dean Kremer, don't forget about him, have made six starts. None of their ERAs are as good. Clay Holmes has basically an identical ERA in five starts, same number of innings. But Mahle has been outstanding. 97% left on base percentage for Tyler Mahle. So that's probably not going to keep up. But I do think, hold on, like if we are just going to dig on Tyler Mahle, weird career, really weird career. And if you recall, he had a stretch, he's been injured a lot, but he had a stretch last season.
The Rangers.
With the Rangers where he put a 2.18 in 16 starts, 86 innings. Not a lot of strikeouts, then he ended up injured again. So, but like he's had these stretches here and there where it's like, it's a good pitcher.
And part of the reason I'm half buying is that the Braves have tinkered with the pitch mix a bit. He's throwing way more splitters.
Like that's the ticket.
Upped that a bunch. And when you look at the Braves starting rotation after Chris Sale, Jordan, I'm going to say four names.
Yeah.
You tell me whether you'd rather have that person or Tyler Mahle. Martin Perez. Tyler Mahle.
Mahle.
Bryce Elder.
Elder's also had these stretches of like a 1.5 ERA. It's on
because he's going to start game three.
I think, yeah, that's pretty close.
Grant Holmes.
Mahle at this point.
AJ Smith-Schauber.
Yes, Smith-Schauber's real wild card. And that's why if you're listening and you have been following the Braves, you're wondering, well, wait a minute. Don't they have a bunch of other really famous pitchers?
Don't they have a lot of Spencers?
So Schwellenbach had surgery again. He's done. Reynaldo Lopez has on the aisle with a knee injury. I'm not sure what his status is. And then Spencer Strider still dealing with elbow issues. And I don't know if they've told
not
him
expected him to pitch. Not they have not said anything yet.
So that's where we are. And for a team that could have a bye, right? They better get, like, think about it this way.
I'm just going to paint.
Think about it this way.
Just paint a picture for you.
If they don't get it, we got Tyler Mahle game two of a wild card series.
I'm more interested in the following, okay? Braves get a bye.
Mm-hmm.
Only the two. Dodgers get the three.
Yep.
In play. Totally in play for.
Of course. Braves have the tiebreaker now.
Dodgers win the wild card round.
Yep.
Head to Atlanta.
Yep.
And it's game two of that series could totally be Yamamoto Mahle or Skubal Mahle, with the Braves having a chance to either go up 2-0 or split the series. Like, we are going to see this person be a critical character in our baseball lives in October, guaranteed, unless he gets hurt. And I don't know if you can say that about anybody else on this list besides Skubal, maybe Clay Holmes with the Cubs, and the one other guy that we need to bring up that we have not talked about yet, the best hitter traded.
Oh, well, I was going to finish the pitching conversation because Freddy Peralta's starting a postseason game.
That is true.
I mean, that's a, and Gausman got at least one of Gausman and Holmes. I would expect probably both of them. We don't know if the Padres are going to be in the postseason, so I'm not going to say, you know, look forward to October Robbie Ray. But Peralta, but okay, that's a good transition to just like winners and losers of the deadline, who you were just about to bring up. And that's Liam Hicks.
The Rays.
So in terms of hitters who have made a difference for their new team. And you listen, a bunch of relievers got traded. How many of them have made a huge impact?
Will Dion.
Like Luke Weaver, who we thought like perfect for the Pirates. It's just
Eric Miller.
Eric Miller has
sucks.
I will say Eric Miller is probably the name to know just because that was already a strength. And now it's like good luck at the end of the game because of what they have. And I don't think he pitched last night, but with Whitlock and obviously with Chapman, I know he had a stinker last night, but Eric Miller is legit. And that is if the path to the Red Sox having a deep run is leaning on their pitching, and Eric Miller is going to be a part of that. One other reliever I want to mention, which is again, getting back to the Rays, is Tyler Wells. What was so impressive to me about also former Oriole, what was so impressive to me about the Rays deadline is they addressed, and if you really want to go, okay, obviously Peralta's not better than Scooble, but they got basically one of the best at three different buckets.
They probably got the second or third best player, the second or third best
top
hitter.
Five for
they got a top five hitter, a top five starter, and a top five reliever.
Yeah, absolutely. Of who was traded. And if you're right, if you're not familiar, like Tyler Wells was having an awesome season. He's continued to be good for them. So for them to be able to add that to the team, So what has so far been and probably will continue to be the runaway one seed in the American League.
Yeah.
You can't really ask for much more. Yes, no. We said, okay, come on, Rays, go get Scooble. And yeah, I mean, I still sort of believe that, but you got to feel awesome about that. And I know Peralta's been up and down, but he's starting to kind of figure it out.
Liam Hicks has been
outstanding. So the Rays pretty clearly, far and away of any other team, have added the most. That was true on the day, and it has proven to be correct. And I think you have to give credit to that front office. It's not like they gave up that. I mean, they gave away some interesting prospects, but no one that they're I think really hurting over. And here they are, which is that's what you should do when you are coming for the number one seed.
The one other move I want to highlight in terms of winners is Luis Garcia Jr.
Yep.
Who went from the Nats to the Yankees and has been the exact same player. Like almost an identical level of production since he got traded. That is very difficult to do. It is very hard to just uproot your life, go from a low stakes environment to the Bronx and keep raking. And that was the draw of Luis Garcia Jr. He does not fit on the Yankees roster at all. He didn't at the time. He won't in October. He can't play second. How are they going to do? It's not going to make sense. I guess now that Stanton is just, you know, gone,
yeah,
it'll make more sense.
Little bit more sense. But one of the biggest X factors, which you've sort of alluded to, is will Aaron Judge need to DH more than we expect?
And if he does, how does that fit? It doesn't matter. They needed an adult hitter. They needed a guy that raked.
Got it.
In a weird way.
Kind of looks like a kid.
He does. They needed someone to do the Glaber thing, where it's like, oh, this guy, he's got a lot of flaws. But he rolls out of bed, doesn't need to wash his hair, have a cup of coffee, and he hits. Yeah. And Luis Garcia Jr. has done exactly that. All right, who's been bad? Adley Rutschman.
Yeah.
Adley Rutschman has been.
He has been. So, you know, maybe last night is the beginning of him being good. Very possible. But until then, it was not great. And most importantly, he just wasn't playing. So,
yeah,
that's not awesome.
Which was kind of the problem to begin with.
Yes. Dalton Varsho, the only acquisition by the first place Houston Astros. Not great. A little bit better over the last week.
Got Dana Brown fired.
Didn't not get Dana? I don't know.
No.
It wasn't his fault, but sounds like Dana Brown was getting fired regardless. But it didn't help that his last move is hitting 180.
Dana Brown could have traded for God himself at the deadline.
Probably true. So Dalton Varsho, not awesome. Is there a path? I mean, he's going to keep playing because they don't have a lot of other options. And the Astros keep, I mean, they're playing well. They just took 2-3 from the White Sox. So Varsho is still important. Like, let's see. I mean, he is going to have the opportunity to have a moment. Remember, this dude hit a huge homer in the World Series last year. So let's not discount Dalton Varsho, but he has not been great so far. Taylor Ward. I will be dunking on the Mariners more later. Taylor Ward, I was like, well, that's exactly what they need. And just as it was with Rob Refsnyder, he has been horrible. He's hitting 111. He is not walking, which is like, if the very least you were thinking, at least Taylor will come in and draw some walks. No, he's not. Strikeout rate has skyrocketed, has not produced. He has not hit a single home run. He has been awful. So
meanwhile,
that's how the Mariners are doing.
The guy they gave up, Alex Hoppe,
doing all right,
has been incredible.
Love it
for the Orioles.
That's great. The Mariners could use Alex Hoppe. I wish Alex Hoppe the best. So that, of course, I mean, that just sums up, you know, just everything has gone wrong for Seattle. So process-wise, it looked like a good move. Hasn't worked out. Taylor Ward has been bad. So one more. Who else has been bad? I mean, pitching.
Luis Castillo.
Okay, that's a good one. Let's finish there, I think. Because again, the pitching at the deadline that you acquire at the deadline is always, I think, the most interesting. You always talk about who's
three buckets
playoff game.
It's three buckets of starting pitching: aces, playoff starters, innings eaters.
Okay. Which is why, as we'll wrap up this deadline conversation, both Luis Castillo and Jose Soriano on the day of, and then now still, are very difficult to bucket. Because now Soriano, I think, will, if the Blue Jays sneak in, I think he's starting game two. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Unless his Savage is healthy, which it doesn't seem like he is. Castillo, it's like, yeah, of course.
He was acquired to start a playoff game.
Yes.
That was the intention and the hope.
Yes. However, Luis Castillo was not good this season, has been getting worse for multiple years now, and that him being acquired to start a playoff game, let's be honest, that was still more a reflection of the White Sox rotation than it was Luis Castillo. Is that fair?
Very fair.
Okay. So now you have a situation where Luis Castillo threw... He started yesterday against Houston.
He has been horrendous.
He has. So he has a 7.52 ERA with the Chicago White Sox. And again, if you were watching, like, if you were watching him earlier this season, like, this isn't totally shocking. It's tough to watch because he's still throwing pretty hard. You'll still see these nasty pitches here and there. But his just execution and his command, and he's just been so homer prone. He's just not been reliable. That said, who's starting over him? Sean Burke, respect to Sean Burke, wrote a little bit about him yesterday. He's getting game one. I mean, he's earned it. Davis Martin was like the dark horse all-star pick, was tremendous for 2 months, regressed hard, was getting smashed in the middle of the summer, goes on the injury list with a blister, just got activated this week, was pretty good in Houston. I still think he's
Anthony Kay.
Probably game two. Anthony Kay, probably not. Friend of the program, Eric Fetty, Papa Shot legend, probably not. So you kind of see, they thought they were going to be bringing up these young pitchers, Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith. I don't think those guys are the answer. So the White Sox, who are still fighting for a bye, they are now, so they just lost a bunch of ground against the Astros. So it's going to be, we'll see. But especially if they slip into a wild card series, you know, it's going to be a lot of pressure on Castillo, because remember, it's not just that they took him on for this year. They took on his whole contract for next season, and he's going to supposed to be an important part of their rotation next year too. But for now, as they prepare for this shocking return to October, I don't really see a way that he's not getting a start for
I agree. I said on the podcast a couple of weeks ago that the Tigers would catch the White Sox, and I'm going to amend that.
Oh.
Guardians. Guardians are really three back of the White Sox.
Okay.
Been a great season on the South side. Do they have the pitching to finish the job? We will see. Speaking of finishing the job, this segment is over. Let's take a break. And when we get back, we will worry about Shohei Ohtani, because the Dodgers don't seem to be doing that. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Something weird is happening with Shohei Ohtani, and we have not hit our Ohtani quota this week. So that is something we need to talk about. I was having a conversation with someone recently about how often you'll hear baseball people say, he's a great baseball player, he's an even better person, and how with Ohtani, it's impossible. because he's the best baseball player?
Yes.
And he can't be the best person? Like, he can't be the best person.
No chance.
Last night, though, his personhood was on full display.
He was just a teammate. He was just a guy in the dugout.
Just a rich guy.
He was just hanging out with, you know, Kike on the bench.
Just a dog owner. Kike played last night.
Okay, so who's on the bench nowadays for the Dodgers?
Alex Call.
Los Angeles. Alex Call.
Alex Call, he was protecting his elbow from Alex Call. Sitting on the end of the dugout away from Alex Call. Shohei Ohtani does not look healthy.
No. How do we know? Well, we do know.
Look at it, bro.
Well, here's the thing. We are battling a very strange
reality.
Yeah, I don't know how to phrase this. We know that he is hurting to some degree because he is not pitching. He has been trying to come back to pitch. And as that has happened, he has not pitched since the beginning of July. There's been 2 months since he pitched in the big leagues.
He's not 100%.
He's not 100%.
Sure.
When they first shut him down, they said his knee, his left knee, his landing leg is not doing great, or his back leg in terms of him as a hitter. Then as he was getting a little bit closer, he's throwing a live BP, he's doing some bullpens. They say, oh, also his right bicep is not doing great.
It's because in the morning, in the mirror.
Yes.
He's like, I would.
We get it. You lift, Ohtani. However, so even as that's happened and they've done the stop start with his pitching, they say he's not pitching. Or in Detroit, it was like, he might start on Sunday, he might not. That was very goofy. However, the whole time, the Dodgers, while continuing to tell you he's not 100%, he's not ready to pitch, not ready. When you say, is this impacting his hitting? They say, no, what are you talking about? Of course not.
That's ridiculous.
There is nothing that he's telling us that suggests that it is compromising his hitting. Until yesterday, when Dave Roberts finally was like, yeah, we're going to give him a day. He goes 0-for-4.
4 Ks.
With 4 strikeouts against the Cardinals in the second game of that series.
Ryan Stanek caking his lunch money.
That brought him to over his last 12 games. So we should note that earlier this season, there was a little bit of a stretch where Ohtani was like struggling on offense. And it was like, oh, no. And he was fine. They went to Coors Field in the middle of August. He had a 4-hit, 2-homer game. He homered the next day. But since then, since that series finale at Coors Field on August 19th, 12 games, hitting 130, 298, 196, 6-for-46, 19 strikeouts. And most notably, like, it, especially the other night, it looked not even just like it, he looked like he was in pain. It literally didn't look like him. Like the way that he was swinging, it just didn't look like the full, because Ohtani gets up there, he's taking big boy swings. And so the fact that he looked like it just was a little bit he didn't have the same kind of power. Obviously, he was swinging and missing. It just looked wrong, especially when he looked at the open side view. His lower half just looked at us like, makes sense. We know his knee hurts. And so that's what's been so strange is the Dodgers have been like, it's not impacting him,
sure,
even though we know he's hurt. So what does he think? He can literally just turn it off when he steps in the box? No, he's a human being.
Yeah.
And it's not surprising that it started to impact him.
The swing looked like he had heavy bones. Heavy bones, the way his body was moving.
They still say, Brandon Gomes, they say, all right, aren't you going to consider an injured list stint? Because now that we are not even really focusing on the pitching anymore, and I alluded to this on Monday after I was with the Dodgers in Detroit, Dave Roberts pretty much said out loud, yes, like him in the lineup is more important for us, is the most important thing for us, especially as the Dodgers try and figure out their offensive struggles. So now it's this weird thing of, okay, well, what is going to set the Dodgers up for success in October? Now the conversation has shifted from, well, we need Ohtani to start a game, to,
you don't.
You probably don't, and you need Ohtani, the hitter, to be hitting leadoff and being one of the best hitters in the world, which he has not been for a few weeks. And now, in theory, if they are going to do this stop-start with him, not put him on the injured list, not let him rest, are they going to be able to achieve that?
There are two different distinct buckets that often overlap. What Shohei Ohtani wants to do and what is good for Shohei Ohtani, right? Usually, hitting and pitching is both of those things. And for much of his career, it has been both of those things. We are now at a point where the best thing for Shohei Ohtani and the best thing for the Dodgers is for him to sit on a beach for a week. You can go to do the Cancun Claws with Ohtani.
But Hawaii.
But Hawaii, because he's got a house there. Stop moving. Go rest, relax, recuperate your body, and get it right for October. Ohtani, in a very relatable, masculine, toxic, hubris, I'm going to live forever, baby, kind of way, seems to be running literally straight past that stop sign. I think he stole a base last night.
Yeah, he did. Or two
nights ago.
Yeah. He's been running more lately, trying to catch up to PCA.
Like, what? So it is the motivations here. Mm-hmm. Who is being motivated and by what is very difficult to untangle. I think that it is impossible to say that Shohei Ohtani is 100% healthy. If he was 100, well, I just want to set that.
Wow.
Okay. He is not pitching. So for the Dodgers to come out and be like, everything is fine. The idea that anybody would imply otherwise is...
They're basically treating him like two different players.
He's one Ohtani, the body, pitch. Dude.
Exactly.
It's one body.
And that's been the question since the beginning, right? If you just reflect on the evolution of his whole career, and I'm sure this dates back to when he was 18 too, but there were two conversations. There was, can he do this skill-wise? The answer, yes. Undisputed.
Yes, he did it.
He's the best baseball player we've ever seen. Blah, 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 blah. But the whole time, and many parts along the way, when he has had multiple elbow surgeries and has dealt with other things, it's like, this feels like a lot of baseball to be playing, right? And when you would just hear about how much he was doing, having to do, even hitting when he on his start day,
sure.
You would just watch it and you would just look at him and you'd be like, how is this guy not exhausted?
I don't get tired. I got six jobs.
How is he not, forget injured, how is he just not wiped?
And we will end the conversation here. You and I have talked off the air about what it will look like when this unravels. Shohei Ohtani will not do this forever. We will not do this forever. You listening, whatever you're doing right now, you won't do it forever either. Time wins and is undefeated. At some point, Shohei Ohtani will take off his New Balance cleats. He will walk away from the sport.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, probably within the next 10 years. Between now and that time, between now and the end of Ohtani, there is going to be a decline. There is going to be a fall off of some sort. That is natural. That is inevitable. His fall off, his decline, will look different than anybody else's in the history of the sport because of what he is trying to be and what he has been. If you're Mookie Betts, who has sort of fallen off a little bit, we've seen this so many times. You lose your bat speed, you lose your power, you lose your running speed, you lose things, and your stats go with them. For Ohtani, it's a different conversation because you can either do both worse or less often, or reduced, or he can pick one.
Right.
Which at this point would be the hitting. I think we would agree.
Probably.
And so when and if Ohtani chooses to finally give it up, focus on one will be fascinating if he decides to do it at all. Because in my mind, Jordan, the reasonable thing to do is for Shohei Ohtani, the reasonable thing is for Shohei Ohtani to never pitch again in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. Reasonably.
I'm not
old hard math.
Far, but I
this year, at least.
Sure.
The freaking coolest thing, though, the rock and roll thing, is for him to never give it up. Yeah, for him to just do both until the end.
Well, and that is really what I want to finish with is...
Till the wheels come off.
You saying when he decides. And that will be the real question is, will he be making the decisions all the way to the end of this contract? Because I do think that at least with the pitching stuff and maybe with this, we are just... oh, so slowly inching towards the Dodgers starting to maybe kind of have a semblance of control over what he's doing. Maybe, maybe not. I could be totally wrong. But I think that the Dave Roberts quote, which he said, the first one we had over the weekend when it was like, okay, is he going to pitch? And he was like, if any other pitcher felt this way, he would not be pitching tomorrow.
But he's going to hit.
But he's going to hit. No, I know. That's good.
It's fine.
But then we bring it to this week. And they asked Dave Roberts to say, what's going on? He says, quote, it's just kind of a day-to-day situation. He wants to be in there, but I'm not going to just put him in there because of the name on the back of his jersey. Dave Roberts says, I'm calling the shots, right? I write the lineup.
That's his Herb Brooks moment. It's the name on the front, not the name on the back.
So
we started to see the Dodgers show some control over Ohtani. And I mean this, like, I'm not trying to say they're being controlling, just like a semblance of
it's normally how this goes. Player team.
Like, when they started to not hit him when he pitched earlier this year.
Right. That was right.
That was kind of the first glimpse we got of it. And now we're kind of getting to a new era in this relationship. And the question now becomes, can he get right before October? And what he does between now and then, I think will be very interesting. If he stops, if he gives up the pitching thing and he focuses on hitting, I feel more comfortable and confident about the Dodgers in October.
If they change their mind and put him on the injured list, which, how many times has he been on the IL? Not for elbow. I know he wasn't on the IL for elbow, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
injured list is not like a thing that he does. So I guess I'm seeing... Oh, but that was 23. That doesn't really
Oklahoma City Comets book your Ohtani tickets.
I don't know. Unless I'm forgetting something oblique. Yeah, and he had the injury. He's had other injuries, but my point is if they put him on the 10-day injury list to just like hang out for him, that would be very surprising, shocking, unique, different, whatever. All right. We did it. We talked about Ohtani. Can you believe it?
All right, let's go.
We're gonna take a break.
Wrap it up.
When we return, it's Friday. We give you the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast. Welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. It's Friday. It's time for the good, the bad, the ugly.
One thing good, one thing bad, and one thing reminiscent of our beloved Dan Ugla, offbeat, odd, reverent. Jordan, I'm going to start this week with my good. And it is Pedro Strop. Who?
Love Pedro.
Yes, Pedro Strop, the man that pointed towards the heavens, the man that not just Fernando Rodney had his hat cocked to the side.
True.
Strop was doing the same thing. A World Series champion. A man who pitched professionally as recently as this past winter.
Mm.
Two innings in the Dominican Winter League for Estrellas Orientales.
I
don't believe he's going to play this year. He is 41 years old.
Well, you know, the other Pedro Strop thing that will continue to be relevant is that his son was signed by the Cardinals last year and is currently playing in the minor league. Pedro Strop, who is how old? 41, has an 18-year-old son playing in the Florida Complex League with the St. Louis Cardinals. However, Pedro Strop will, of course, be most remembered for his time with the Chicago Cubs. Which brings us to your good.
He won the World Series in 2016, and this week, out of sheer spite, he traveled to Cleveland to watch the Guardians because that is where he won the World Series. He posted
years ago, right? So
10 years ago,
near a celebration, right?
10-year anniversary. Shouts out to Cody Del Mendo, who took this video and put it on Twitter off of Strop's Instagram page. It's him basically flexing the World Series ring at Progressive Field and being like, I had to come on my 10th anniversary. You know where
I am. The ring.
And he's wearing the ring and he's just like, suck it, Guards fans. I'm here.
So
it looks like he's there by himself. Like there's no one sitting next to him.
Okay. So I'm going to ask around about this when I'm back in Cleveland. First of all, I wish, like, if I had seen him there, because I was there. Yesterday, 2 days ago. like, I don't even know if I think I would recognize him. I mean, Pedro Strop is very, especially with the outfit.
Two reasons you'd recognize him. He's wearing a World Series ring.
Okay, sure.
Hard to miss.
Pretty big.
Two, the hat's cocked to the side.
It's true. That's Pedro Strop. There's no doubt about it.
No.
But I'm just going to ask around, like, is he...
It's just, yeah. Is he cousins with, like, Angel Martinez? Like,
yeah, there's plenty of Dominicans on the, or I guess, like, the Blue Jays here, like, the Vladdy. Like, I don't know. But I love this, and...
Good. It's good for either reason. Either he flew out there with his ring for the sole purpose of being like, I was on the 2016 Cubs. We beat you fools. Here, game seven, flags fly forever.
Best day of his life.
Best day ever.
Right, yeah.
Or... He was in Cleveland for some other reason.
But that,
wait. And then thought to himself, you know what would be funny? Is if I sat behind home plate with my ring and pretended like I only came here for this. Both of those scenarios are amazing.
Yeah, I look forward to asking around about this because this is really something. So Pedro Strop, definitely good. My good takes us to the minor leagues where a gentleman named Andrew Fisher hit his 44th home run of the season last night. What you got?
I am reaching my hand out to Jordan Schusterman to shake it, for those of you not watching online, because Andrew Fisher, he of the 44 home runs, was about as high as I can remember Jordan being on a draft player above the consensus.
You were
in on this
game. I was like, I was sold. Now, he had a great college career, 3 schools, 3 years.
Wasn't an eighth round pick.
He was first round pick, but more of a second round pick kind of coming into the draft or what was expected. And then I talked to him at the combine and I was just like, I'm sure there are people that think this kid is super obnoxious and that's fine. I want this guy on my team. Like the way he describes what he's thinking when he's going into the box, I was just like, he is going to do damage.
What?
And my goodness, has he done damage? 44 homers in 117 games. Is the offensive environment in the minor leagues out of control? Absolutely. You could read J.J. Cooper's fantastic story at Baseball America. But listen, 44 homers in the minors is not something we've seen years and years and years. He's coming for essentially the modern minor league record. I don't know if he's going to get there, but... The number that stood out for me in the minor league was Chris Bryant, 43 homers in the minors. This is for his only pro season. And now he's past that, and he's still got another couple weeks of games. So Brewers prospect AA, I'm just a huge fan of this guy. So
there's been a lot of strikeouts.
So many strikeouts.
Like so many strikeouts.
So many strikeouts. So many walks.
A lot of it is in zone miss,
yep,
to my understanding.
Yep.
Andrew Fisher answers a question. What if Juan Soto was born in Jersey?
And struck out.
And struck out and was worse. Sorry, let me back that up. What if Juan Soto was 30% worse?
Yeah.
Struck out, was born in New Jersey.
Yeah.
He moves like him in the box. Like,
I also just, yeah, that's, and that's how he described it. Like, he has that energy like Soto in that same sense.
In the way that Soto is trying to worm his way into the pitcher's brain,
yeah,
in the box, Andrew Fisher is trying to do that.
Yeah, and I just love too, because obviously minor league baseball means a lot to us, and players who have these memorable stints in the minors, normally they're fragmented, or it's like, oh, well, if you're here for only so long, you're going to get promoted. It's just so unique to pull up someone's baseball reference page and see him have 20 homers at one stop and 20 homers at another stop in the same season. Like, I've literally never seen that before because it mathematically is impossible for anybody usually in the past. So, a Wisconsin Tim Rattler legend and a Biloxi Shucker icon. So, Andrew Fisher probably will be in the big leagues at some point next season.
And for producer of the program, Andrew Hart's big music head, this kid grew up down the shore, 10-minute drive from the Stone Pony in Asbury Park. My bad this week.
Oh, yes.
Colorado Rockies, who were not bad this week.
Oh,
won a series against the Orioles.
Almost swept. They were a Colton Cowser miracle catch from sweeping the Orioles.
But their tweet was bad. This is from @Rockies.
Oh, no.
So MLB Network tweeted a video, one of those tiny mic videos, asking their various talent personalities who should win NL Rookie of the Year, Sal Stewart or J.J. Weatherholt. And this video is interesting in and of itself, this MLB Network video, because everyone says Sal Stewart. Literally everyone. John Heyman says it. Dan Plesac. What's the guy's name?
Lowe.
Roflo, what's the really tan guy with the white hair? used to be a GM.
Dan O'Dowd?
No.
Steve Phillips?
Steve Phillips. Sorry, Steve Phillips. Mark DeRosa, the manager from Team USA. All of them, across the board, they all say Sal Stewart, which I get. And then the Rockies tweet one of these baseball reference side statistical side-by-sides that includes rookie TJ Rumfield, and it says, or perhaps the two-time NL Rookie of the Month. And it shows Rumfield's stats side-by-side with Weatherholt, Stewart, and the Mets' Carson Bench. And the only the only categories that Rumfield is winning is batting average and OBP, which he's probably only winning because he plays in Coors.
So this
you're just
so funny.
Dunking on your own player.
Here's the thing. Here's the problem.
Yeah.
TJ Rumfield's been pretty good on the road.
To me, just post a cool picture of TJ Rumfield and say two-time rookie of the month. Because that's a
two-time rookie of the month. I'm like,
he should get votes.
Attention.
He should get votes.
I think he will get some fifth place votes, maybe. Probably. I don't know. He's in the mix. He's had a great season. It's been a great find for them. But, like, right, that's the problem. I mean, putting up the side-by-side where it makes him look bad is, like...
If you put up the side-by-side... Like, I'm looking at the side-by-side right now, and he looks worse. He looked definitively worse.
Right. So, that's the problem. So, you could have just...
But the war's higher. B-war's higher.
You could have kept it simple.
Anyway, this also kind of, in my mind, elucidated my Rookie of the Year take, which is for MVP... I do not have a vote, by the way, like for these things, so I feel comfortable saying this. For MVP, I would be more statistical. I would dive into the analytics and I'd do my research. For Rookie of the Year, I'm going old school. RBIs, home runs.
You're on that boy nice?
Vibe. That boy nice. Rookie of the Year
on field. That boy
nice. Yeah, but he not as nice as Sal Stewart.
No, Sal Stewart is like the definition of that.
Sal Stewart is a definition.
He really is.
Of that boy nice versus...
versus, like, value.
Like, J.J. Weatherholt, valuable.
I want that guy on my baseball team more than Sal Stewart, probably.
But is
yeah, I do.
And actually, J.J. Weatherholt, nicer than Sal Stewart. Not that Sal Stewart's mean.
Yeah, but in terms of
just... J.J. might be the nicest person in baseball.
We should give Sal Stewart more opportunities to be nice to us. Because he just hasn't had as many chances. Whereas J.J., we've, you know...
Yeah.
Many, many more run-ins.
So for Sal Stewart, the question, Jordan, that boy nice?
My bad is the Mariners of Seattle. So, I mean, lots to choose from over the last few weeks, obviously with them, but I'm just going to keep this one simple. We've been talking about it for weeks. They've been on the fringes. They've plummeted down the standings. They're 10 games under, but then you look at their schedule and you'll say, oh, but look at the schedule. You can't have it any easier than this. 17 of their final 22 games are against the three teams with the worst record in baseball, the A's, Angels, and Rockies.
Well, as the great Ryan Divish points out, after the Mariners struck out 18 times last night in their series opener at home against the Yolo County A's, who's the fourth worst team in baseball since July 6th? The Mariners. So when we say, oh, well, they got to be looking at the schedule saying, whew, we got a real chance here because we got all these bad teams coming in. No, no, no. Those bad teams are looking at the Seattle Mariners and saying, we can win this one because they suck too.
Worry about yourself.
Yeah.
So the other day, Jordan, I filled in for our old baseball camp that we used to work at. You know, they needed a body. I ran camp for an hour. And when I show up, the teams had already been preset. Mm-hmm. And one kid comes up to me and goes, can I be traded? I don't like my team. The kids aren't good enough. And I was like, no. Kid goes out, makes three errors. And I said, hey, hey, little bro.
This would not fly on the better team.
Well, no, my point was like, worry about yourself.
I see. You take care of your business.
Take care of your business.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not the solution. So anyway, Mariners.
I just, you know.
Get my point.
Whatever. They will, you know, like, I mean, their playoff odds are still somehow like 15%, but they're going to get eliminated by one of these bad teams at some point. It'll probably be in Colorado, but that's what they've earned. So,
all right.
Bad. Let's go to Ugla, which is more fun. We can have some more smiling and laughing. however, I believe your Ugla was also in the running for your bad. So why don't you tell us about the latest with Ketel Marte?
The hat.
Wow.
If you're listening to this, maybe you've seen the hat. If you haven't,
wow, Wow. So Ketel Marte, who has... We were doing Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego Ketel Marte for a little bit. We found him. He came back. The Diamondbacks fans booed him.
Well, we should clip. I think that we should provide a little more context about him getting booed, because I think that that also related to
sure.
his comments before the
game. There was like a miscommunication with some comments where he was asked if he had a message for the fans. He said no.
The clip is kind of surreal, because you hear a reporter ask, do you have anything to say to the fans?
Which is a layup. It's a layup, right?
It seems like the translation... People who know Spanish can explain this better, but the point is...
Me?
Clearly, yeah, Jake knows Spanish better than me. It seems that enough people who speak Spanish said that how it was translated to Ketel Marte was clearly not successful, because the question is, do you have anything to say to the fans? And then it gets translated to Ketel, and he just goes, no. And like, unintentionally, that is very funny, but I do think that that contributed to him being booed a lot.
Absolutely.
Like, I mean, he's probably getting booed anyway because the whole week, but I think that that made a difference.
All-time unacceptable interpreter moment. My understanding, Jordan, is that the way it was interpreted, translated, was from the word fan to the word like aficionados, or like, which is affections, which is like
interests,
which is like hobbies, which I believe Ketel probably interpreted as, do you have anything to say about your hobbies? Which I would imagine he thought meant the casino.
Oh,
he was asked about the casino, and he was like, my hobby.
That's a great explanation that doesn't make the outcome any better, but
is certainly ugly.
Very unfortunate and very ugly, right? Which brings us to Ugla, but let's get back to that.
Nothing is more ugly than the hat, because Ketel has this whole thing. He gets booed. There's a misinterpretation. He goes to his locker and, you know, he puts on this lid. And there is a certain sort of fashion that is not my type of fashion. It is very popular among many Latin American baseball players, which is assortment of words that don't mean much in bright colors. Yeah. And that's exactly what we have here. As Ketel's hat says, may the bridges I burn light the way.
I mean,
it's incredible.
So then the next day he was asked like, hey man, what's up with that? He's like, I don't know. I didn't even know what it said, which, you know,
here's the thing. Do I believe that Ketel didn't think twice about the hat?
Yes.
Of course he didn't think twice about the hat. I don't think this is some like NFL wide receiver doing like,
that's why it's ugly.
Five levels of, you know, maneuverability here. I think that
you
this
stepped is in it in a way that you just can't even fathom.
And this is what is so bad about this. Someone in the Diamondbacks clubhouse should be like, could we do a different hat? Could we do a different
okay,
hat?
Okay, so
from this hat?
From a PR standpoint, for sure, I'm laughing at the idea. Although I will say, I don't know if there's video of like, because we've done plenty of post-game scrums where it's like the guy, okay, so he goes and showers and they're getting, I could see a situation where like the hat's in his locker, no one else sees it. He turns around because the media's there. He just grabs it, puts it on because he's getting ready to go. So there wasn't as much time for someone to say, hey dude, let's pick a different hat. However, if he was wearing it for multiple minutes before then, I am laughing at the idea of like his teammates like looking over and just,
oh my God, like, oh no, a different hat. No, do a different hat though.
It's so funny. It's so funny.
It's the funniest thing.
All right.
I should also say, yeah, I bought the hat.
So you'll see it at some point on the podcast.
I had to.
He found the hat. He bought the hat.
It's going in the end of season time capsule. This
hat. Oh, wow. Can't wait. And you actually have it, so we can put it into the physical one that exists. All right.
Absolutely.
My Ugla comes courtesy of Michael Clare.
Who?
Our former colleague at MLB.com, still at MLB.com, and he wrote one heck of a story with the headline, they may have lost 39 straight to set a record, but this team is still proud to play the game.
Is this about some like Czech third division baseball team?
Shockingly, no. Michael Clare, the Czech baseball expert, has decided to write about a baseball team in America, and that is the Red Pocket Mobiles.
If you're wondering, that's a weird team name. That's because Red Pocket Mobile is just a cellular company that has decided to sponsor.
It's like Red Bull Salzburg.
Exactly. That has decided to sponsor a team that is aptly named the Mobiles because they are the 12th team in the Pioneer League. They needed a 12th team because a team folded. They needed, for the schedule to make any sense, they needed a 12th team. And so they formed the Red Pocket Mobiles, who decided to sponsor this team, to be on the road for the entire season. Okay?
Oh, no.
This team...
I thought they were in Mobile.
No.
On paper.
Pioneer League used to be an affiliated league. They're up in the kind of the Big Sky territory.
When you go to their website, before teams, news, scores, schedule, standings, tryouts.
There you go.
Clicked it.
So there's so much in this story, so I just encourage you to go read it. Dimitri Young is the manager who played on the 2003 Tigers that almost lost the most games in baseball history. There's a lot here. You should read the story. What is ugly about this, by the way, they lost their 40th consecutive game last night. So they're on an L40. They're 13-80 this year. Two most ugly things about this. One is the quote in this story from their director of operations, Al Malding. He gives this quote, presumably with a straight face, and I just am so impressed. Quote, "We can hang our hat on the fact that we're not going to finish with the worst professional record of all time. We know that for a fact. Our 13 wins is already two times as many as the Empire State Grays had in 2022. So we're trudging along, we're doing our best, and I'm really hopeful that we're going to get a win this week." Indeed, there was a team
sure,
a few years ago.
Sure, bro.
The Empire State Grays went 6-80, 6-90. They were also a temporary outfit in the Frontier League. Incredible. So much ugly here. But just this quote, we can hang our hat on the fact that we're not going to finish with the worst professional record of all time. That's true, but they have set this record for longest losing streak, breaking a record by the 1923 Muskogee Mets. Okay, again, so much in this story. I encourage you to read it. However, something that is not in this story that is my ugly in particular is just everything about the Pioneer League is amazing.
Oh my God,
and
the stats.
Oh my God, the stats. Okay, so the stats are amazing, but this is my very basic ugly. This team has lost 40 games in a row. As we said, they are now 13-80, and this team does not have the worst ERA in the league. In fact, they do not even have the second worst ERA in the league. And that is my ugly. The fact that the team has lost 40 games in a row because the run environment in the Pioneer League is so comical and has a 10.39 ERA. That is not the worst mark. That is courtesy of the Great Falls Voyagers and the Idaho Falls Chuckers.
Jordan, here are the ERAs of the pitchers with the six most innings in the year.
For the Mobiles or just?
For the Mobiles.
The Mobiles, yeah.
8.04 in 81, 10.05 in 74. That's my favorite. A 10 ERA in 74 innings is like, all right, let's send it back out there to get killed on the moon.
So it's just, there's so much. The whole Pioneer League baseball reference page is amazing. If you're wondering, okay, well then they must suck in hitting. That is the answer, relatively. They have a team OPS of 840, which obviously in the big leagues would be the best. However, in the Pioneer League is so far and away the worst that when the league is hitting 324, 426, 534.
960 OPS.
The OPS in the Pioneer League. But
four teams are over 1,000.
Four teams are over 1,000. So there you go.
Yes.
There you go. Yo, the Idaho Falls Chuckers,
dude,
having a 10.58 OPS and a 10.92 ERA, those games must
be those games.
Class.
It's like the Nats.
Oh my God. You thought the Nats were crazy.
Royce Clayton Jr.
Listen, I could get
into this team.
I could get into the names.
Excuse me.
Team.
Eric Sim played for this team?
Oh, I mean, that doesn't surprise me.
Wow.
There's a lot of names. I won't spend any more time on it. But anyway, go read Claire's story. It is incredible. There you go.
Ugly. Wow.
All right. We are almost done here. Let's now look ahead to the weekend. They're playing a lot of baseball this weekend. Can you believe it? A lot of four-game series, including, reminder, Tigers-Guardians, which begins today with a doubleheader. And tonight, Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV. We will be altcasting the first two innings. Pre-game show starts at 6:45 p.m. Eastern, pending weather, pending that first pitch changing. It should be okay. I checked the forecast. It looks like it's going to be all right. But we have a lot of other baseball happening this weekend. And if you're going to go watch some in person, make sure you're using the Game Time app to get your tickets. What series stands out to you this weekend?
I might actually use the Game Time app this weekend.
Where are you going to go?
Because it's my birthday tomorrow.
It is.
And I'll be here in New York. And I was thinking about like what I might want to do. And I was thinking maybe if a friend of the program, Sarah Langs, is around, I want my wife to go say hello to her. So maybe I'll get a ticket for my wife on Game Time.
Giants Mets.
Not a lot of other people showing to that.
Get some good seats. Okay, Giants, Mets. All right, so that's an option for you.
Braves, Phillies is the second.
Braves, Phillies. That one is obviously a big one. Yankees at Padres. That should be an electric environment. Padres trying to get back on track.
Spencer Jones.
All Padres homecoming. Spencer Jones homecoming. That is very cool. D-backs Astros is an interesting interleague matchup in terms of postseason implications. Cubs at Marlins. We've said, listen, you get tickets at Lone Depot. That shouldn't be a tough take.
Although you think the deals in the Game Time app are good. Imagine how good they are at Lone Depot.
But Cubs in town, that's going to be a good one. And also Marlins still kind of in this thing. Kind of.
Reback.
And then one more thing to mention before we say goodbye, which I can't believe it, but Jake is more involved than me. Fantasy football.
I'm in two fantasy football leagues, Jordan. I'm in two leagues.
And if you're going to sign up for fantasy football, make sure you're doing it on Yahoo Sports. Make sure you draft a team. This is the last weekend to draft before the season starts next Wednesday.
So what I'm about to say, I'm not being paid extra to say, okay?
Real thing that happened.
My high school friends, I left their league, a league you used to be in.
I won in 2008.
You won in 2008.
Said, adios.
And you left. And they kept it going. I left for 8 years or so. And this year, I was like, you know what? I miss my friends. I'm going to come back. So I went back and I said, where are we drafting? And they said, redacted. And I went to that unnamed app and I opened it and I downloaded it. I did the draft on it and I hated it. The interface was awful. It was legitimately terrible. You know what's not terrible? Drafted on Yahoo.
Do it.
I do my other team.
And if I, listen, we'll see. There's still time for me to sign up. You know, I will not be signing up on Redacted. I will be playing on Yahoo.
You know, I'm in that league with a couple of different.
More Redacted names.
A bunch of other Redacted names.
Yeah.
You want to join that league on Yahoo with me?
We'll see. I have time, so I still could make that decision.
I drafted. I took the wraparound pick at the end.
Love that. You get some good players. I guess.
Had Jonathan Taylor.
Oh.
And Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Love that. Those guys sound like they score touchdowns. Remember, folks, Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV tonight. Join us on our altcast pregame, half an hour before first pitch. We'll be on for the first two innings. Andrew Sears, Foster Griffin. If you've never heard of Andrew Sears, just know that the stars have aligned for us to talk about Andrew Sears on this altcast. I'm so excited. It's really awesome.
I don't want to toot our own horn. However, the fact that this guy is pitching this game is literally the argument for the Cespedes Family Barbecue. The idea that this D3 pitcher, who was in our brains as far back as 2021.
Who I went up to in Detroit last weekend and talked to for 20 minutes with no one else. Like, who's that guy? I'm like,
every other baseball commentator people would be shivering in their boots at the idea.
We can't wait.
Of having to talk about Andrew Sears. Not us. We're locked in. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Brett Rader. And
everyone here
at the Yahoo Studios. Marianne.
Yeah, shout out to Marianne. We appreciate everyone here. Looking forward to the Allcast. And thank you for supporting Baseball Barbercast. You can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Make sure you're subscribed to the Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel.
Please do that.
And we will be back on Tuesday. Good thing to remember, we will not be podcasting on Labor Day, but we will be here on Tuesday. So you can look forward to the rare Tuesday Barbercast. Until then, have a good weekend.